Broadcasting from the Annie Up Studio, it's the longest running poker podcast for the everyday poker player with your host, Joe Scales.
Hello, A-Team. It's Friday, March 8th. Welcome to the Annie Up Poker Podcast, where every hand is an opportunity, every player is a friend, and every episode is a winning experience. I'm your host, Joe Scales, and I'm excited to be back doing this show. Thank you guys for your patience, as I obviously wasn't able to get a full podcast together last week. Elle and I got in the car and drove literally halfway across the country, and even now, I'm putting the show together for you from Kansas. So after mentioning, you know, that we had a family emergency on the podcast last week, I got some emails of support that those meant a lot for sure, because believe me, it wasn't easy for me to not have the ability to put together a full episode for you guys. Felt like I was, I don't know, letting you down in some way. However, here we are, back in the swing of things. It's a little awkward putting this together in an unfamiliar place, and it hasn't been easy to find a quiet place to record, but I hope you all enjoy hearing the familiar voices again this week. In fact, that's all I have, so let's get on with the show.
Find out what conversations are happening around the poker table with Table Talk.
We are back around the poker table with Elle and my dad.
Well, yep, I'm open. I'm ready. Play poker.
We're all here this week. It's been a family-filled special time together.
Yes, it has. We drove literally halfway across the country to get here, but here we are.
In Kansas.
The best place to live in the world is Kansas, southeast Kansas. Got to Oklahoma, we got Missouri border, and so we love it.
We actually, we drove out here because, you know, we mentioned last week we didn't have a full podcast because we had a little bit of a family emergency, but we drove out here. My mom passed away Saturday, and we've been here helping support family too, and so.
He's talking about support. He is supporting the family.
Yeah. Really difficult, but special time for all of us this week, so.
Yeah, it has been, and it was much of a pleasure to have them come down and be with us and enjoy their company. Okay. And helping me out an awful lot. It means a lot.
Well, we've enjoyed being here too. So.
And we'll be here another week.
You will? Oh, no. No, they've been wonderful.
Thank you. We love you.
Yeah, I love you.
And you're a casino goer yourself?
Oh, yeah, I love those casinos. We don't spend much money. Me and my wife, we used to go out there, and she'd take $50, and I'd take $50, and she'd either win $90 back, or I'd win $90, and we'd turn around and come back home because we're rich.
We took him out to Indigo Sky.
Yes.
We took him out there the other day.
Yes, sir.
And truth be told, he took the whole 100 with him himself.
But we got a lot of casinos around here. All you got to do is just drive 50 miles and you can play at any casino that you want.
Quapaw,
Indigo.
Wyandotte.
And Wyandotte. I mean, within 50 miles, we probably got at least 15 casinos around this part of the country because it's right next to Oklahoma, and we've probably played in every one of them.
Maybe we'll have you on to do a review of a few.
That'd be great because I kind of like the BS, you know.
Well, we sure do love you.
Goodbye, y'all.
We did get a number of emails from listeners wishing us well after we had mentioned, you know, that we were not able to put the whole podcast out last week.
Yeah, and that means a lot to us. We're a community, and communities stick by each other through and through. Yeah. In the peaks and in the valleys, and this week we might be in a valley, but we're still all one together.
Yes. Yep. Speaking of emails, though.
Yes.
We did get an email that we actually got it a couple of weeks ago, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it. We got it from a listener, Stephen Coleman, and we had actually asked him if we could talk about this on the air before we did, but I thought it would. Today's International Women's Day, so it's it's a good time to talk about this topic because the subject of the email is poker and relationships.
Yeah, and actually, Steve, this made me giggle and smile and warm my heart, but also make me think, too. So it says, Joe, first of all, you've done a great job each week with the podcast. You have a really great voice for the poker community. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, yeah.
It seems like Elle has really enjoyed learning the game, too. You are correct. And I'm curious if she's always enjoyed poker / casino games or if she's developed a passion for it because of you. I've tried to teach my girlfriend poker, and she has no desire to learn the game and seems to think my buddies and I are probably, quote-unquote, up to no good when we have a home game. We've been together for over 2 years, and I've never given her a reason to believe that there would be anything shady going on during a poker night, and she still refuses to join me at the casino. I wish she could see the game for what it is. That's why it's been so awesome to hear Elle give her perspective from the standpoint of learning the game, and I just hope she can inspire more women as well. Sincerely, Steve Coleman. Steve, I gotta tell you. Number one, Steve, Joe and I's first date only happened because it was at my favorite restaurant, and I went for a free meal, truth be told. He knows this as well, so no surprises to him right now. But no, I was not always a fan of casino games or poker. I actually never stepped foot into a casino until we came to Kansas, and his mom took me. His mom and his dad and Joe and I.
I forgot that that was your first trip into
a
casino.
Yeah, so they taught me how to play the slots. And Joe had been teaching me how to play poker for over a year at that point or two. And I listened when he would play in home games.
Well,
and
truth be told, I made you play poker because all of poker had shut down during COVID.
I had to play, actually, because this is the way that Joe's brain gets stimulated, because it is statistics and math. And so I think that's honestly what drew me to the game was, yes, his genuine love for it, but also that it wasn't just about gambling. So I always assumed that casinos and poker and craps and table games were just all about losing money and a bunch of degenerates sitting around smoking and drinking and picking up hookers. So that's not the actual case. And I have come to learn and love the game because, number one, Joe's taken the time to show me how. And it did take a while, honestly, Steve. It took me a long time to really dig into it. But I've met a lot of people, learned a lot of things. But I will also tell you, Steve, it's not going to happen if you have a bunch of guys trying to talk to your girlfriend. If you have women who are playing and women who will include her in the game, that makes a huge difference. My first tournament that I played in, I didn't want to play in, and it wasn't until I had had a session with AJ Rudolph in Chicago with Poker Power. I came to the table and Joe said, I've been telling you this for 2 years. I said, yeah, but a woman told me. You know, it does. I know that sounds silly, but it does make a difference. It takes the intimidation away a little bit. Now, I play in tournaments with mixed company and, you know, just everybody's a person, poker player at the table. But I didn't go into my first tournament until another female came up to me and said, just put your money in and let's go. And I was ready to go because I said, I have an ally. So sometimes it's difficult to sit at that table when you're a little nervous and also when you don't understand the game itself. So have her call me, Steve. I'd love to talk to her. And I really hope to bring more women to the game. And I appreciate you giving me that challenge and perspective.
But also understand that not everybody is going to enjoy the games. If she doesn't enjoy poker, that's okay. She doesn't have to. You can all have your own things. But the part of that that worries me is that she has this idea that you're up to no good all the time when you're playing. And I wonder if you have the games at your house sometimes and just encourage her to stick around the house so that she could see that you're not doing anything nefarious.
Yeah, but I mean, I think poker just has that stigma.
Oh, it does.
With
yeah.
it. I mean, it just does. And so I agree. Having it at the house is one thing, but also just explaining to her more about why you like the game.
Yeah.
And having her try a few hands or, you know, including her in, I don't know, maybe she could deal one night, even though she doesn't know the rules. It would be a fun thing for her to be able to be a part. That's when I fell in love with the game, when I realized there was more to it than just drinking a beer, sitting around, shooting the shit. Yes, that happens. But, you know, try to compare it to what she does with her girlfriends. When you and your girlfriends go shopping or you go to the coffee shop or go to the bar or wherever they go, what do you like to do? It's another community. Right. And why do we like to get together? We have something in common that we like to do. And just because it has a stigma doesn't mean that we're doing that thing.
Right. And that's actually, you said exactly what I was trying to get to, is that poker is a community. And if she can see that side of it rather than concentrating on the negative connotation that it brings, then maybe that would help. So I don't know. I hope that helps some, Stephen.
Yeah. But, and we really appreciate that email. Keep them coming, guys.
Yeah. That's really cool. Also, one of the things that I wanted to talk about this week, on the drive here, we saw the news.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Martin is going to start a new bankroll challenge. He has abandoned his entire bankroll. I don't know what that
impressive.
Means. I don't know what that means, really, like what he did to get rid of it. But he has abandoned that in an attempt to go from $0 to whatever he can make, I guess.
Well, and it's 10 years from him going into this full time, right? So
yeah,
he's given himself a decade to make a good run at it. And now he said, let's hit the reset button and host the Truman Show, or what was the show he was on?
Big Brother.
Yeah, he's super comfortable being on camera for 24/7, so he's actually doing that, and is streaming 24/7 now. That means he's got the camera on while he's eating, sleeping, showering. Good God!
Hopefully, he's facing the other direction.
Okay. apparently. Also, his goal is to get $5,000, which is what he started his poker career with. And his second goal is to set a record for the longest stream of a poker player. So if you want to follow that action over on his Twitch channel, it's Kevin Martin, capital K, capital M.
Yep. I actually checked it out a little bit ago, earlier today, in fact. And he's been streaming now for 225 hours and 31 minutes.
Wow. Well,
more than that now. But when I checked it out earlier, that's what it was at. It kind of makes me wonder because, you know, I've been doing a similar thing. Obviously,
oh, yeah.
Not streaming it. But I took $0 on Global Poker and just trying to see what I could do with that. And we're up to $100 now. Woo! Nothing extreme, obviously, but I also haven't been playing as many hours, I'm sure, as
right.
he has. But it just makes me wonder, you know, if people would like to see that. I mean, I would stream some of my sessions. I would stream some of my sessions with Global Poker if that would be something that listeners would want to see.
Well, let us know.
Yeah, they could email us. Let us know at podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
Nice little throw in there.
Yeah.
Hey, and you know, we're sitting around the table. I want to give a huge shout out to our friend Mike St. Clair. Not only did Mike St. Clair jump on a plane and fly out here to be with us
during
a really difficult time, that was huge.
Yeah, it was.
But after about 4 days of being in a house together, the boys all decided, let's hit the road. And they went out an hour or so from here and found a $60 tournament at Indigo Sky. And I'll be damned if Mike didn't take the whole thing. Number one, And I just could not be happier. Fine as frog hair, as your dad would say. You know, just I could not be happier for him. Number one, that he got first in the tournament, but two, he won a significant amount of money, and that makes me happy that he has more money in his pocket since he made that very fast trip out here to be with us. So,
and then he flew back to help Annie Up cover a charity tournament that's going on in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Yeah, he's betting on better this weekend, isn't he?
Yeah. Yep. I talked to him earlier today. He was out there interviewing players and talking to Michael, runs the whole thing. And so it's good to have people in your corner. I think maybe we should have him on next week with us on Table Talk. Maybe he can talk about that tournament a little bit.
Yeah, fill That'd us in. That'd be good. But. Well, Joe, even during the heart, it's always a pleasure to be around the table with you.
Likewise. See you next week.
Now it's time for Call the Floor with Elliot Schechter.
Elliot Schechter is the poker room manager for Rivers Casino in Schenectady, New York. He joins us each week to say how he would roll on situations that come up in your games, and he's with us again this week. How you doing, Elliot?
I'm doing pretty well. It's good to see you, Joe. How you doing this week?
Doing all right. We had a little pause on the podcast last week, so it's good to see you again. And Greg Ajimian, he sent this in for the podcast last week. We didn't get to it, so I really want to touch on this because it's a really interesting topic. And it was a situation that was brought to him by someone else after playing another local tournament. So basically, it has to do with breaking tables and how to balance them and stuff. So what he says is, we're looking to clarify the differences between breaking tables during a tournament and balancing tables. Our understanding is that when breaking tables, players may assume any position on their new table. This specific example focuses on two tables remaining with six players on table one and five players on table two. The big blind gets eliminated on table two, leaving four players. Is it ever appropriate for the tournament director to move the small blind from table one to table two, filling what would be the small blind on table two, but leaving table one with only a big blind, thereby giving preference to table two having both a small and big blind? If not appropriate, what position should be moved from table one to table two? And then he gives his thoughts here, but I want to hear your thoughts first, and then we'll talk about what he says.
Okay. Well, let's unpack what you're doing here. Your understanding is correct with one single exception. Yes, new players coming from a table that was broken may assume any position at the table except between what would be the small blind and the button. A player coming in a tournament cannot be dealt out of a hand just because you move them. That's not how it's supposed to work. Everybody's got to play every hand. Otherwise, the tournament's not fair. If you don't play hands and your opponents are, well, they have a chance to lose and you don't. So that's the only exception. So yes, you can even inherit the small blind or the button coming off of a broken table to fill in the remaining tournament tables. So that part's correct. Absolutely. Somebody paid a blind somewhere. Somebody's got to be the button. If it's a player coming in from another table, again, it theoretically doesn't matter because everybody's playing each other in a tournament, regardless of what table you're seated at.
Right.
So, yeah, it's completely fine. It's the way it's supposed to be done. It's fair, and it's fairly random, hopefully. So the rest of that, if not appropriate, what position should be moved from table one to table two? Well, the example you quote is rather incorrect according to the TDA rules and accepted practices. You never want to move somebody who's a small blind from table to table. If the big blind gets eliminated on a table, you're not going to move the small blind to fill in the small blind. The big blind gets eliminated, you end up with a dead small. If you're going to move a player off the other table, you're going to move the big blind, not the small blind. And that big blind will post the big blind at the obviously corresponding table. And sometimes if you lose the person who was the big blind, and you end up with a dead small and you have to move the big blind to balance, the person coming in will post the big blind by himself. He'll post the single big blind. That's the way it would have been had a player not been moved. So it might as well be that way after you move the player. It's incredibly fair. You don't want to get fancy. You don't want to worry about hole to hole or matching seat to seat. So you're not going to move a small blind off of a table ever. Don't do it. Don't think about it. Don't try to reconcile it. Don't rationalize it. Do not do it. You're going to screw things up. And you don't want to screw things up after you move a player. It's harder to solve and makes it less fair for the players in the tournament. At least if you're going to screw up before you move the player. So again, don't move the small blind. Whoever's going to be the small blind, they get to stay still. If somebody's already posted their big blind and played it through, whether they folded the hand or not, that player's not getting moved. He's going to sit there and play off his button and hopefully the rest of the round. You're not moving anybody besides the person who's in the big blind or about to be the big blind if they haven't dealt the cards yet. That's it. You're only going to move that player. So it's not appropriate to move anybody out of the small blind. So what position is it appropriate to move from table one to table two? Whoever's going to post the big blind is the player to get moved right then. It's the only player. Nobody else. Don't consider moving somebody from another position. You move the player who's about to post the big blind. It's that simple.
Right. And that makes sense. In this particular case, there's only two tables, right? And so really, that's more of the balancing the tables part of it. But if you're actually breaking a table, well, then it's just random, right? You're just giving them those cards with table something, seat something, right?
Well, that's supposed to be the procedure. And it looks like we'll cover that in part two of his submission. But yeah, when you're breaking tables to obviously fill in the remaining seats at the other tables, you should be assigning them seats at random. And they can inherit any spot except for between what would be the small blind and the button. You don't want to deal anybody out. So, yeah,
right.
Try to keep it simple and try to stick to the TDA rule. The TDA rule was created with fairness and simplicity in mind. Simplicity is a form of elegance and is generally easy to explain and is easy to understand. So you want to stick to very basic methods when affecting tournaments at important times. When you're down to the last two tables, that sounds like a pretty key time to me. You don't want to make things complex and convoluted. You want to keep them simple, explainable, and fair.
Right. So you mentioned it. Let's just jump into his little two cents here. He says, whenever I break a table, I'll move the small blind to table one between the button and big blind, unless table one lost their small blind. Then I'll move big blind to big blind at table two, big blind plus one to big blind plus one at table three, etc. I believe this to be the fairest, he says. When I balance tables, I generally take from behind the button and move him or her to behind the button at the new table. This seems to have the least impact on their table.
Let's break this down. This is convoluted. This is cumbersome. This puts a stop to a tournament when you want it to keep playing and to run smoothly. And now you're stopping the momentum. You're making everybody wait at a time when they could be at or near the bubble. This is not the time to raise the tension level and raise the anxiety level. This is the time to keep things simple and fair and random. And none of this is random. Don't worry about position to position for a whole bunch of reasons. Number one, it's obviously not random. And worrying about how many hands somebody gets for the big blind, granted, that's not a small concern, but it's much less of a concern than expediency and fairness. It's not necessarily fair. And remember, you might not have the seats available. As soon as that happens, and it's very likely, and now all of a sudden the people you're trying to move to position aren't getting the position they were supposed to have. So once again, don't think about the hands that somebody deserves to get because they posted their blind. You just can't worry about it. It comes out in the wash. Everybody gets the advantage in the long run. Everybody gets the disadvantage in the long run. You can't worry about somebody getting a whole round of play just because they posted a big blind. It's generally shorthanded play anyway. They're not getting a whole lot of hands for that blind.
It's true.
Somebody's got to post the big blind and somebody's got to post the small blind. Try to make it fair. When you're breaking a table, you've got to pull the seed card, and I hope you're using seed cards for these tournaments. When you're breaking a table, you pull the seed cards from the available seats, and you move the players by a random draw, and it's a double blind random draw. So the dealer or whoever's dealing needs to high card the table, so everybody has to be assigned a card. And highest card starts from when the actual seed cards that have been randomized and shuffled are distributed from that point. So this way, there's no way to know who's getting what seed. It's completely random. Nobody thinks you're trying to move somebody to a special seat or trying to help them avoid the big blind or get the button twice. It takes all of that out of it, which is good for you. It's good for the game. People know you're not putting your thumb on the scale. People know the game is on the square. People know it's all random. If somebody gets socked with an extra big blind, that's just the way it is. It doesn't happen too often to any one player. And like I said, in a lifetime of poker, it's going to even out for all of us.
Right.
So you use the specifically prescribed method the TDA has written for all of us. You've got to randomize the assigned seating when it comes to breaking tables. And it's faster. It's going to be, you're not going to ruin the momentum. People are already ratcheted up to the highest level of anxiety on the button. I'm in the bubble. You don't want to make it worse. Just make it quick, painless, move the players, get the clock started, and boom, you're done. Don't make it convoluted. Don't pull people from behind the button. When you're balancing tables, take the guy who's going to be the big blind and move him to the worst possible position up to and including the big blind. Don't worry about pulling position to position, hole to hole. That's from 25 years ago, and it wasn't good then either. You take the big blind. This way, the person who might be when you're breaking tables, the person who might be posting the second big blind within a couple hands of his already having played a big blind, now he's catching another break. He's catching the extra hands in this bet because the first available seat might be three spots away from the big blind. And that's generally how it comes about. That's how the favor is returned. That's how balance and fairness are restored. So don't go behind the button. He's third off the button, so I'll move him. I'll move this guy who's third off the button to the seat that's third off the button. Now, once again, dealers are dealing at different rates. Players are playing at different rates. By the time you pull that player off the table and move him to the other table, a good many times he's not getting the same position that you wished he thought he had.
That's true.
Make it hard. Don't make it convoluted. Don't worry about it. The very fairest way is to pull the person who's going to be the big blind off of the table and move him to the worst possible position at the next table. And please don't come back with, well, now the guy who would have been under the gun now has the big blind. He lost one hand. You know what? The tournament lost the player. Somebody had to lose a hand.
Right.
And the very next hand, he was going to have the big blind anyway. So nobody's skipping a blind. Nobody's being sped up in the game. Nobody's being forced to take extra blinds. And as it happens, the guy who was going to be the big blind at the table, moved to the other table, may get an extra hand or two. That seems kind of fair to me. He's still going to have the big blind in a couple hands. And you're moving him to under the gun. So it's not like he's gaining a positional advantage.
Right.
So again, work the equation in the other direction. Work from the big blind and not from the button. Yeah, keep things simple. Keep things universal, hopefully. Don't worry about moving somebody off the button to or in the hijack to the other table. Don't do that. It makes it more complex. It makes it more difficult to keep track of. And again, you're breaking, every time you do something that's non-standard, you're breaking momentum. If you pull the big blind off a table, the dealer can just make the other guy that posts the big blind and he can deal and move on with life. If you're trying to pull somebody from behind the button and move them to the other table, now you've got to make sure that two tables are paused so you can move that player without having lost the position you were hoping to move him to. Don't do it. You're just making life miserable for a whole lot of people at a time when they probably don't want that to happen.
Yeah, Greg, I really appreciate you sending this in because I think it's a fantastic conversation. Even if you're not somebody that is in a position to have to worry about these things, it's good to know.
You're well above average for tournament floors across the country. And the fact that you're paying attention to what's going on, you're literally paying attention to the games that are in front of you, which let's face it, it is sadly a far cry better than a lot of our colleagues. So again, you're starting from a great place. Now just keep it simple. Simple is easy to explain. And when you can have the why along with the what, that makes it so much better for all of us. So you're in a good place and you're almost there. Just remember, keep it simple. Don't make it complex. Don't make it convoluted. And remember, simple is also fair. It's not unfair. It's just a different kind of fair.
Oh, there you go. I think that's a perfect ending right there. If anyone has another call the floor that they would like to know how Elliot would rule, send it to podcast@annieupmagazine.com. Elliot, I appreciate your explanation as always.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
We'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Let's break it down with Hand of the Week.
We are back with another Hand of the Week with Patrick. How you doing, man?
We are back. I'm doing well, my friend. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Doing well. We had a little bit of a pause last week. We didn't have a Hand of the Week, so I'm excited to get into this one. It's also one of my own hands, so I'm excited about that.
I love this. This is going to be an all-timer.
Before we get into that, though, let's give a shout-out to Jackpot Digital, our Hand of the Week sponsor. I know I mentioned this in the little blurb last week, but they have supported this show since October. And, you know, week in and week out, they're there. So special shout-out to them. I really appreciate all that they do. If you are ever in the multitude of locations and ever-growing number of locations with a Jackpot Digital table, be sure to sit down at one. Send us a picture of yourself there and let us know what your thoughts on it are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, think of it as a team, you know, the Annie Up and Jackpot Digital together. I mean, it's just a growing team, you know, on both sides. So it's going to be a fun ride. You know, I can't wait to experience myself and, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later we have, I mean, they're, like you said, there's just so many places. You know, sooner rather than later, we're going to have someone that's, you know, subscribes to the magazine or listens in that's going to be like, guys, I finally got to another one, and this is awesome. So I would imagine that's going to be the feedback. So
exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Indeed, but we definitely thank them.
Yeah. So let's jump in this. Like I said, I'm excited to see how you play it. I'm really curious, where we stray, if we stray. So
okay.
We are playing a tournament. Blinds are 400, 800. And we're eight-handed at the table. All right?
I mean, that's just your favorite right there, eight-handed. You love that. Not.
Exactly. But we've got to whittle it down. So we've got 28,400 in our stack. So we're doing all right.
Okay.
We are under the gun plus one.
Okay.
Under the gun limps to us. We have the 10 of clubs, 10 of spades.
Oh boy.
So how do you start with this? We're in early position.
I'm feeling pretty good about that one. You know, limps to us.
Blinds are 400 and 800.
I feel good about that hand. It helps weed it out. I guess I would probably go a four bet with it.
So you would make it 3,200-ish?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay. I didn't go quite that high. I raised it to 2,000.
Okay.
So I just made it 2.5 times, which is my typical raise. I tend to do that with whatever I'm raising. I try to stick with 2.5 times from the get-go.
Does that, we going back to like, you know, previous hands, does that weed out enough when you're this many handed, you feel?
In this particular, in this particular game it does. You know, sometimes you kind of get a feel for it as the game goes on, right? And so some games you have to go a little higher or whatever. But in this one...
Yeah, that's absolutely... Yeah, I was just going to get to that. Is you do got to get a feel for it. So, like, if you're early... You know, if it's early on, especially in something like this, then so be it. But if you've got a feel for it, then that's probably a little bit closer. I mean, the goal with what I was getting at was to, you know, hey, we've got a good hand, good starting hand. We want to weed most people out and then gauge where everyone is. So... You know, right. I have no problem it being less than that if you got the feel that it's less. But anyway, so you did what?
I did 2,000.
Okay.
And it does the job. It whittles it down. We only get a call from Under the Gun, which was original perfect. Limper. Okay. So he only has 19,000, which is still healthy, but we have him covered. Yeah. He has 19,000 in his stack. And one other thing that kind of was of note here, he didn't really seem excited to make the call. It was more of a, well, I put the money in already. I guess I got a call. Kind of call.
Okay, fair enough.
So there's 5,200 in the pot now. Yep. with the blinds. And the flop is the 10 of hearts, jack of diamonds, 7 of hearts. Under the Gun checks to us.
Well, I'm sitting at that table, I'm holding back a smile. I'm going to give a couple of breaths. I'm going to reach for my stack, and I'm going to probably put 2,500 in at least.
Okay.
I want him to call. You know, even at this point, you make him on, you know, holding aces, kings, queens, whatever. You're the only thing that's taking you down right now is jacks, obviously. If he's holding jacks, which is in his realm, he could. But I'm feeling pretty good about it, and I go in a little less than half pot.
Yeah, that's exactly what I bet. It was 2,500.
I mean, great minds think alike. Love this. All right.
They called very quickly.
Well, I don't like that quite as much.
Here's the thing. The reason that I bet there, you know, because I have a set, so I could have checked, right? I could have just checked and saw the next one to try and be deceptive, right?
Yep.
But I didn't like the hearts, so I wanted to put in a bet. Obviously, my hope was there that he just folds and we take it down. I thought it was enough. I didn't need to get super involved. But I also think a quick call usually indicates a draw of some kind. So I'm thinking he probably has hearts.
Yeah.
So that's in the back of my mind. There's 10,200 in the pot now. And the turn is the 2 of spades.
Okay. Still feeling good there.
Yeah, Under the Gun checks to us again, too.
You might call me crazy, and that's fine. My wife's called me crazy before, so we're fine. With a quick call like that, it's still on a draw. I'm probably going the same thing, somewhere close to half pot then. If he's on a draw, he's probably calling. If he's got jacks, he's definitely calling for sure. You know, maybe even going over the top, but I'm probably going, you know, 5,000.
Okay. Because I'm thinking he's on a draw, I wanted it to be the wrong play for him to call me, right? So I wanted to go a little bit higher.
Okay.
But he's only got something like 14,000 behind. So I put in 7,500.
Okay.
And I think if my math was right, that left him only about 7,000 behind if he called.
Okay.
Which is exactly what he did.
Quick call?
It wasn't as quick. He thought about it, and he actually thought about it for probably close to a minute before throwing it in there, which means, to me, even more confirming that he has a draw, right?
Yeah.
But he did make the call, so that put 25,200 in the pot. And the river is the ace of diamonds. So the flush didn't get there.
No, but the straight did.
Yeah, and the end of the gun puts in his last 7,000. So here's the question. Can we even fold here?
Sure you can. You take the cards and you push them in the middle of the table. Do you live with yourself afterwards is the question. Yes, obviously we were sitting here talking about hearts, but when the flop comes out, so we're holding 10 of clubs, 10 of spades, and the flop comes out, 10 of hearts, jack of diamonds, 7 of hearts. A quick call down the line is, yeah, you're thinking hearts, but I mean, he could also be holding queen, king.
Yeah.
And he just did make it straight. It is a very, very hard fold. And I don't think that I would make it. I think I call. I mean, I do have chips afterwards. Obviously, you're very well depleted. But yes, I think in the moment, you're probably making that call every day.
Yeah, I just the number of hands that are beating us, right? You could have a set of jacks, like you mentioned.
Yep.
Could have king, queen.
I don't make them on aces.
No, me either.
I mean, he could have 8-9. Did he flop the nut straight?
Oh, yeah. He did not. I did go ahead.
Hold on. I was going to say, did you? Hold on. Time out. Because you're talking from, I'm assuming you called.
Yeah, I did make the call.
Which left you with about how much? Do you remember?
Well, I mean, I started the hand with 28,000, so it was still, I still had a pretty hefty.
You still had a workable stack. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. It definitely, well, I'll just,
putting in a
it definitely does leave me with not much behind to play with afterward, but they did have the king queen. After I made the call, they turned over the king of clubs, queen of hearts.
All right, let me just say this, and I was telling you this as we were, you know, getting set up. So I got to listen to, I was in the car for a long time. I got to listen to some episodes, and I was listening back on, you know, different strategies and whatnot. I feel like, you know, coming from a novice point of view, it's almost, you know, different nights and different games that you play from either an aggressive place. Or you play from a little bit more of a you know, hey, I'm playing, I'm going to see if I can make some money, but a more conservative place. I think if you're sitting there in a mindset and you've got a little bit of conservative, like, you know, angel on your shoulder, if you will, you're probably leading up to that. You're probably making them on either a straight or a flush draw. I think everything pointed to that way. I think it was, you know, I think it does. And then it's a tough one to fold. Let me put it that way. I mean, folding a set sucks.
Right.
So, you know, if you're coming from the conservative place, yeah, maybe you're like, hey, there's the ace. You know, good for you. Let me take an extra 7,000 plus what's in my stack and go on. But, you know, if obviously you weren't sitting right there, so you make that call.
Well, I'll be honest. The 7,000... into a pot of over 25,000, I don't think that one is as much of a wrong play as you mentioned. He could have flopped a straight, so maybe I should have slowed down on the turn or not bet as much on the turn, maybe. That would be the only thing I can think of here. I think I'm making that call all day long because it's 7,000 into 25,000. So with the number of hands that can beat me, I don't think that's the wrong call. I may be wrong. I may have made a mistake there, but I didn't even think about at the time. I didn't think about them having 9-8, you know, but I think I got kind of stuck on that quick call. Because they called so quickly, I immediately started going down the draw road that I wasn't thinking about them possibly having the straight already.
Yeah.
But.
Well, but looking back, so your bet was what, 7,500 on the turn?
On the turn, yeah.
I mean, that's a big bet on a draw. I mean, he's sitting there, he's looking for one of two cards, and, you know, it's eight-handed, right? And, I mean, there's a lot of cards that have been folded. I mean, let me just put it this way. That's a big call on his part for not very many outs.
Eight, to be exact.
Well, there you go. Someone's done the math on this one. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, that's just...
Yeah,
if I'm putting myself in his shoes, I'm not making that call on a draw.
He had no business being there at that point, but I think that looking at it from a whole hand perspective and not being results oriented, I think that I made some mistakes here because I just needed to either maybe try to get it in earlier, like once that flop comes, do a pot sized bed or something like that.
Yeah.
And really put the pressure on them there from the get go. I don't know. I'll be interested if I could hear from some of the listeners what they think about that too, how they would have played the hand. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that would be cool. Have some of them send it in, and we can either start our segment next week with a couple of responses if we want to.
Yeah, I think that would be good. And
yeah.
So if you would like to send something in on how I played this hand, or if you want to send in a hand of the week for yourself, send it to podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll do this again next week. What do you say, Patrick?
Sounds good. We will do it again. Cheers, bud.
It's time for Joe's One-Outer.
Poker is a great equalizer. The cards you hold matter way more than your background or status in society. At the poker table, success depends on skill, strategy, and a touch of luck. This leveling of the playing field creates an environment where individuals from different walks of life can interact on equal footing, fostering camaraderie and mutual respect. Poker also has the ability to forge bonds between people who may otherwise never even have crossed paths. And it doesn't matter if they're discussing hand rankings, bluffing techniques, or the latest tournament results. Poker players find a sense of belonging and connection through the shared passion for the game. In a poker room, a retired accountant might find themselves seated next to a college student, a construction worker, and an event planner, all engaged in friendly competition and lively conversation. As the chips fly and the cards are dealt, stereotypes and preconceptions dissolve, leaving behind a sense of unity and shared experience. The connections forged at the poker table often extend beyond the confines of the game, too, leading to lasting friendships and collaborations. Poker communities frequently organize social events, charity tournaments, study groups. These all provide opportunities for players to engage with one another outside of the tables. I mean, in a world divided by differences, poker serves as a powerful force for unity and inclusion. By bringing together individuals from diverse backgrounds and fostering mutual respect and understanding, poker can transcend barriers and build bridges between people who share a common love for the game. So, I would encourage you, the next time you gather around the felt, get to know those at the table with you. You may be surprised at how much all of you have in common after all. That's today's One-Outer, and that's today's show. I'll see you next week, A-Team. And until then, I'll see you at the tables.
The Annie Up Podcast is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call the show at 540-339-7741. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to editor@AnnieUpMagazine.com.